Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Knowledge Podcast, brought to you by the Wahoo Sports Science team in Boulder, Colorado. I'm Neil Henderson, head of Wahoo Sports Science.
And I'm Jeff Hubler, strength and conditioning specialist with Wahoo Sports Science. Today, we're going to talk about a couple of different aspects of recovery, specifically passive recovery and active recovery.
Well, Jeff, we know that proper recovery is a critical part to being able to perform well. And we often think about training as this kind of like equation of stress plus rest yields adaptation. The stress that we're talking about is effectively the training that we do. There's a fancy definition of recovery that I could use, a multifactorial series of processes that when coupled with proper training leads to allowing the body to adapt to the training that we do and effectively get better. But recovery is really just the balance of not training. It's time and potentially even things that we can do to allow our body's natural process to recover, adapt, and improve.
Yeah. Wow, that was a mouthful, but I get it. So we're talking about passive recovery and active recovery. So would you say that passive recovery is essentially rest, Neil?
Yeah, that's kind of it. It's fairly simple in a way. There's different things that we can consider when we think about that passive aspect and rest. One of the big ones is sleep. Nearly a third of our lives were spent sleeping. And during sleep, there are a lot of things that are going on within the body from a hormonal perspective that allows our body physically, as well as even from a mental perspective, to recover from the day, from what we've done, just daily life, as well as then the training stresses that we're placing on our body. So sleep is probably the most critical aspect of passive recovery. And when we think about sleep, which we're going to talk about sleep in an entirely different episode sometime down the line, but sleep, we think of both the quantity of sleep, so how much we sleep, how many hours, you know, on average, adults need somewhere between 6 and 10 hours a night, pretty big range, but then also the quality of that sleep. Those two things are really important.
You know, would you include napping in there? Or of course you'd include napping in there.
Definitely. So naps are part of that sleep total. And if you are relying on daily naps to supplement a lack of kind of nighttime sleep, you're probably definitely selling yourself short on the amount of actual nighttime sleep that you need. The kind of rhythm, the sleep cycles, again, whole nother episode, mean that a longer nighttime sleep is definitely better than doing a short nighttime sleep and then a longer nap during the day. Yeah. Generally speaking, you're going to be way better off emphasizing that nighttime sleep for sure. Very important, but on occasion, if you have a little bit of time and you are tired, you have some fatigue, a little quick nap definitely is beneficial. So, you know, it's not that naps aren't good. It's just that you shouldn't be relying on them consistently to try to get your sleep totals up.
Talking about a few more things with passive recovery, you know, one of the things that we might do is literally not do anything different. Just go about daily activities.
Definitely some just downtime. You know, kind of not doing something, not being active, not standing, walking around. That could be just, you know, quietly reading a book, consuming, you know, some media, whether it's listening to music or watching a show, watching a movie. That's kind of also in the realm of passive recovery. That allows your body to be taking care of things. Now, if what you're doing in that passive time is really more stressful from a mental perspective or strenuous, you might get a little bit of physical recovery happening there, but there's actually still a potential to slow down recovery if we are getting stressed out. If you're pouring over, you know, really intense work or something in that vein that's quite straining on your mental cognition, well, that's actually not then recovery anymore.
Right, right. We're adding stress instead of taking stress away. So if we flip the script here a little bit and look at active recovery, there's a lot of different things that we could do. Let's talk about those a little bit. You know, what's the relevance, so to speak, of recovery one and then active recovery specifically?
When I think about active recovery, it's doing something to help speed up or improve the quality of your recovery process. You're doing something on purpose, either some sort of activity or potentially using some sort of modality. And this could range from, you know, just going for an easy walk or taking an ice bath to using some sort of a compression boots or getting a massage. It's something that you have to plan and actively do something. That's really why we call it Active recovery.
Right on. Some of the things that we're trying to accomplish with recovery, whether it's passive or active, would be, say, refueling.
And rehydrating.
And rehydrating. Absolutely critical.
So on the refueling, it's you know, getting those energy stores back up, especially carbohydrate. The rehydration is getting that fluid balance back up. When we think about then repair, reducing inflammation, and some of that is actually increasing blood flow to these areas that helps speed that recovery process, bringing in, again, some of the nutrients, but also clearing out some of the inflammatory response. And so that's really what we're thinking about on that repair side of things. And it just does take a little bit of time for that to occur, but you can accelerate it with some of these things that we'll talk about.
Yeah, and that's a critical point that you make. You know, a lot of times we think, you know, if I think of repairing tissue or we get injured and people say, oh, well, let's ice that down, right? And that would seem to decrease blood flow and reduce pain and soreness. But when we take that away again, we actually increase blood flow. So it speeds up that circulation.
Absolutely. So you know, using specifically like cooling in that respect, yep, as you said, you have a reduction first in inflammation. But when you take that cooling off, then you get a reactive hyperemia. You have a big increase in blood flow. So that's then going to speed that repair from whatever damage and stressor you had in the area.
Right. And so you already mentioned a couple of things that we might do there, like an ice bath or
getting a massage,
that kind of thing. So
yeah, you can do an ice massage, right?
An ice massage.
Little Dixie cup, half filled with water, put it in the freezer and tear off. And there you go. You can do a little ice massage.
Yeah.
Two in one almost.
Perfect. You know, some of the other things that are relevant, we talked about restoring balance or...
And specifically that nervous system.
The nervous system.
What's going on. So we have sympathetic and parasympathetic responses for our body. So sympathetic is kind of that fight or flight. And when we do training, when we do activity, we have an upregulation in that sympathetic system. If we keep that turned on too long, that's when we start to have a problem. So we want to do things that kind of get that parasympathetic system going. That's kind of your rest and digest side of things. It kind of downregulates and slows then that upregulation of the sympathetic. So that's where some of these kind of relaxation types of things, being mindful, beneficial listening to music, those are things that could all be part of that.
You know, one of the other things that is a key component of recovery, whether it's passive or active, is to build confidence in the fact that you're doing the things that you need to do to perform at a high level again, that whether it's the next day or the next week.
There's parts of this that, you know, in some cases can be considered almost a placebo effect, that in taking time and energy to address something that you think is going to help speed up your recovery, you have better confidence and there's a greater likelihood that then you will feel better in the following day or days after by having done those things. Again, there are those structural things like sleep and refueling, rehydrating that are critically necessary. But some of these other adjunct activities that we might do in the kind of active recovery realm might be more a little bit of a placebo and just helping us build confidence that we have addressed. We've taken some time and energy to help put ourselves in the best potential place to recover from the work that we've done.
Let's shift gears here a little bit. Let's talk about a recovery drink or meal and that kind of thing. Would you call that a passive or active recovery?
Yeah, that's in the active realm. You have to actively be eating and drinking. Once that's in your system, then passively your body is going to be able to use that. So putting the right things in at the right time. Again, a whole nother episode on some of our fueling after training, how to get the best benefits, but clearly addressing those will clearly have significant impacts on our.
And would you call it active because you have to plan it? Like you have to plan it and time it? And
I don't know about you. I don't know about you, but like nobody is actively like putting my food and fuel in my bag or preparing my lunch for me. I'm not in that fortunate state of being like a professional athlete who might have somebody, a nutritionist who puts together their meal and gives it right to them right when they're done training and then, you know, prepares dinner for them, you know, a couple hours later and all those things. You know, the regular person out there, we have to put a lot more time and energy into planning and having those things available. But just as an athlete, like having a few things, having a little packet of recovery drink, having a couple, you know, bars, things like that in your training bag is really something that you can do to help accelerate that and just have access to some of those foods and fuels right after you're done with training.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is premeditated recovery techniques, things that are available in a timely manner, in a practical manner. Like, you know, if you're not at home, what can you get access to?
Exactly. In a perfect world, I'd love to have, you know, real fruit and food and do a smoothie and have all this kind of thing. Well, in reality, you know, I had 30 minutes. I did 25 minutes of exercise. I got 5 minutes to change and chug, you know, a little something. And so that's what it is. So perfect world versus real world, you know, make sure you just have access to something that you can do that's, again, maybe you get 90% of the benefit from just that quick bar, you know, or something you have in your bag.
If we talk about when do you actually need to do an active or passive recovery, would it be, you know, every day? Would it be after an intense race?
Oh, no. Most importantly, after your most intense sessions and your longest sessions. Those are kind of the two areas that are going to be the most important for kind of recovery and applying these different things.
Should I stress out if I don't get particular?
Yeah. So if you don't do what you had planned, is that going to make you feel worse? Well, geez, if you stress out about it, well, it's going to make that potentially, you know, less optimal adaptation be even more negative or have a bigger negative impact. So do what you can, but don't stress when you can't would be another key thing. Some of the other activities and things that we think about active recovery is just doing a little easy movement, easy spin, easy swim. Some people can do an easy jog, but if you're not a real runner and run with a lot of frequency, it's hard to do a truly easy run just because of, you know, every step is an eccentric muscle action. There's a little bit more impact there. So for most folks, especially most of our cyclists out there, we don't recommend easy runs, but true runners can do it.
Yeah, if I got off my bike and went for an easy recovery run, I would be out for a few days.
Yeah, it would slow the recovery process for you. So
not the way to go.
Just keep the intensity nice and low when you do those easy activities. And it doesn't have to be long. It can be 10, 20, 30 minutes. It could be up to an hour. Again, you might see a pro athlete that they do a recovery ride that's an hour and a half or 2 hours. Well, that is relatively speaking easy if they're used to doing 4, 5, 6 hour rides. So it's all relative.
Yeah, and so what we're trying to do is just increase that circulation and delivery of nutrients.
Some other things that do that. Yeah, massage, foam rolling, you know, even like a percussive massage tool. There's a few different brands out there, a lot of different brands out there these days. But, you know, generally speaking, using those things can feel good. You can target an area that you might feel a little bit of tightness or soreness. It's really about kind of increasing circulation. Are there any negatives to some of those tools that you've seen?
Yeah, you know, with those massage things, you can overdo it, right? You can do too much in an area and stimulate your sympathetic nervous system, which doesn't let you calm down. And you can actually do some muscle damage if you're not used to it or if you do it too hard. Kind of even goes with getting a massage. If somebody's a little too aggressive, that's not really what you want for recovery.
Yep, definitely. A little bit more of a flush, we often call that. Just those, that lighter massage.
Yeah.
A couple other things that we think in the active realm, you have compression, and that can be either like those progressive, like pneumatic compression boots, or even just something as simple as like compression socks. There's some benefits here, especially if you're doing a training session or a race and you're jumping in a car and you're going to be in a car for a long time or jumping on a plane, you know, compression socks actually can be just a safety thing and help you reduce the potential for getting clots. So that alone, but like those boots, what do you see there?
Well, I think they're great. One, they get you to sit still, right? You can't be doing dishes or doing laundry while you're in the boot. So they get you off your feet and help you to, you know, just take a few minutes, close your eyes. And, of course, there's the benefit of increasing the circulation, increasing that blood flow. And
yeah. Interestingly, before Evelyn Stevens' hour record, she did a warm-up, and then she did about 15 minutes in the boots at a lower setting than normal. So not like a post-session recovery, but just a light compression before then getting ready for a final little warm-up and getting on for setting an hour record down in Colorado Springs. So again, some of these things can be used in different ways. And for her, it was, again, just mentally, she was shut down, laying down, and just kind of doing some mental training.
Yeah, kind of a quick charge on the battery before
getting ripped. Get ready. A couple other things that are pretty common out there, hydrotherapy, especially like a contrast bath. So sometimes we think of just an ice bath, which ice baths alone, one of the big benefits there we can see, especially for those when we're in like in the summer and it's pretty hot and you get overheated, you get better sleep quality for doing an ice bath before going to bed. It lowers your core temperature down and that sleep quality goes up. Now, whether there are a lot of other additional benefits from, you know, what happens with that cooling down the temperature of the muscles and changes in blood flow reduction and increase, then those are still maybe a little bit questionable, but for sure, if you sleep better, I can tell you that's a big win.
And just like you said earlier, that placebo effect, if you think that that's going to help you sleep better, it's probably going to help you sleep better.
In addition to some of the other movement we talked about, like the, you know, endurance, you know, easy, light, low intensity, you could think of stretching and yoga as both being some sort of movements out there. Stretching is probably anecdotally the thing that everyone accepts as recovery, which, you know, there's not a ton of evidence that says, you know, in terms of scientific evidence that says stretching absolutely is great for recovery. But there's not a lot of negatives if you're doing it after activity.
That's a really good point. And there's, you know, we go back to the nervous system and doing static, low intensity stretching is one way to upregulate that parasympathetic nervous system, which is going to calm things down as long as you don't overdo it.
Yep. And so, again, thinking about calming things down, that meditation, mindfulness, mental training, those things just really, really important. And that's a great time. You could even do some of your mental training in a way, some self-talk. If you're using like positive imagery, that's good. If you're going through your imagery and thinking about like the bad situations of race and how you're going to manage it, it may not be in that calming. It's going to be useful for mental training, but I wouldn't necessarily say that fits in your meditation, mindfulness side of things. That's going to down-regulate. It's almost amping you up just a touch.
Yeah, and that's something something we can expand on later in another topic, but it's almost like having those snacks in your bags, right? And pre-planned, pre-recorded mental activities that you can literally record your voice on, whether it's your phone or, you know, if you're my age, it's a cassette tape. And, you know, just pop it in and take 5 minutes and have it free-loaded in your brain of being positive and restorative. And those are super powerful.
Definitely. I thought you were going to say 8-track tape, but you're just a little bit after that. That's good.
I got some of those too, but yeah. I lost my recorder.
Even just thinking in the app, you know, when we have, you know, if somebody's following a training plan, we have that ability to add mental training, and some of those things are like breathe deeply as some of those. And that's perfect. That's working on just getting that mindful reset. And that is really useful part of training. And we build it into training schedules because we know that it helps people get better. So a couple takeaways, big picture here, Jeff. We need both sleep quality, and we need some relaxation time. We need to refuel and rehydrate. And then we also have to have a plan for what is practical that we can implement in our, you know, have in our arsenal, something that takes a long time to set up and do. It's probably not something you're going to do frequently. So ease of use is part of that.
Yeah. And the only thing I think that I would add to that is just having some premeditation about what's going to happen after your, you know, big training session. If it's at home, it's pretty easy to do these things. But if you're on the road, you might have to think about it ahead of time. Where's that going to come in? And then how can I make it happen really easy? Just like you said, what's practical and what's simple is usually what's best.
Yep. Plan and purpose with that, and then use what you can. And don't stress, right? If you can't get it, if you can't, you know, do exactly what you wanted to do, just breathe.
Let it go.
Let it roll. And rest, recover, get ready for the next one.
Rinse and repeat.
And that's it for another episode of the Knowledge Podcast by Wahoo. Hopefully now you have learned a bit about active and passive recovery strategies that can help you be a better athlete.